The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 9, text number 27, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Hathikari, recorded on December 15th, 2007, in Christchurch, New Zealand.
So, tonight, in this most auspicious gathering, in this most auspicious atmosphere, of the most auspicious devotees of the Lord, under the direction of the most auspicious spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedantati Dandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, we are studying the most auspicious teachings of Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Chapter number 9, Bhagavad Gita. Text number 27. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yat karoshi yadashnasi yajjohosi dadasi yat. Yat tapasyashi kanteya tat kadushva madarpanam.
Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thus, it is the duty of everyone to mold his life in such a way that he will not forget Krishna in any circumstance. Everyone has to work for the maintenance of his body and soul together. And Krishna recommends herein that one should work for him. Everyone has to eat something to live. Therefore, he should accept the remnants of foodstuffs offered to Krishna. Any civilized man has to perform some religious ritualistic ceremony. Therefore, Krishna recommends, do it for me. And this is called archana. Everyone has a tendency to give something in charity. Krishna says, give it to me. And this means that all surplus money accumulated should be utilized in furthering the Krishna consciousness movement. Nowadays, people are very much inclined to the meditational process, which is not practical in this age. But if anyone practices meditating on Krishna 24 hours a day by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra round his beads, he is surely the greatest meditator and the greatest yogi, as substantiated by the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita.
Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jata Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam
Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Shcha.
This verse, the perfect formula, everyone can practice this. Are there any of you here in this room tonight that do not do anything? Does anyone here never do something? Is there anyone here who's inactive, who never does anything? I don't see any show of hands. If you don't do anything, if you never do anything, raise your hand. Actually, just by raising your hand, you're doing something. You'll be defeated. You see, we're always doing something. That's the point. You can never not do something. The Mayavadis, they had this idea, yes, you have to become the non-doer. Don't do anything. But still they are breathing. Even if they go to the forest, they give up their job, their family, their kids, their pet dog, and they give up everything and they go to the forest to sit down and meditate and do nothing. Still they are breathing. Still they are eating some wild berries growing in the bushes. So even though they think they are inactive, actually they are active. That's why Krishna mentions one who sees action in inaction. The so-called inactive Mayavadis and yogis, they are active. The point is, you cannot avoid acting. You must act. Even if you want to be a yogi in the Himalayas, you must act. You cannot avoid acting. So, since you must act, by nature you must act. Your unavoidable nature, you must act. Therefore, you have to learn how to act perfectly. That perfect action will liberate you from all the anxieties of material existence. Who is the prototype of perfect action? Arjuna. Some people say, well, I don't want to get into Hare Krishna movement because then I'll, you know, what will happen in my business career, you know, my corporate, how will I feel competitive for going up the corporate ladder if I become a Hare Krishna? Actually, years ago, when I was a brahmachari for 14 years and then I got married, so I took some training in computer programming and I went out for a job interview. This was a company that was known for being what we call a sweatshop, where they work you like crazy, 80 hours a week. There was a person named Ross Perot. He had this company called EDS, a computer consulting. I went to interview with those people. Really work atmosphere. So I didn't have any job history, but I put down Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, you know, salesman for Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. So it looked like I had some kind of work history, you know. What kind of brahmachari I put down in his resume? Right? As soon as they saw Bhaktivedanta, they said, oh, that's something from India, you know, that means you're not competitive. We don't want you. Rejected. Actually, that's illegal in America. You can't, on the grounds of religion, I was rejected, which is against the law. But I didn't push it because I didn't really want to work there anyway. Of course, I ended that career after about 3 years, became a preacher, a full-time preacher. I was thinking, what is the use of... There are millions of computer programmers. How many preachers are there out there saving people from birth and death? It's a full-time occupation. Since I didn't have any kids, I was able to get away with it. But anyway, the point is that this employer was thinking, oh, Bhaktivedanta, that means you can't be aggressive. You can't be competitive. You're one of those non-doers, you know, non-violent, non-resistant. You know, you don't have any drive. That was what he was thinking. But that is a false conception of spiritual life. That if you become a spiritualist, then you have no energy anymore. All you can do is sit around and chant 24 hours a day. You can't do anything. You can't accomplish anything anymore because now you're a spiritualist. That's not at all the fact. And Arjuna and Hanuman are the perfect example. Look what Hanuman accomplished. Even without being requested to do so, he put the whole city of Lanka on fire just to get even with Ravana for kidnapping Sita. He was a pretty fired up devotee. So fired up, he put the whole city on fire. So being a Vaishnava, a devotee of the Lord, doesn't mean that you can't do anything, you can't accomplish something, no. Actually, it means you accomplish more than anyone else. That's what it means to be Krishna conscious. You become the most competitive person. A devotee, he's the most competitive person because he wants to make the whole world Krishna conscious. A devotee of the Lord wants to revolutionize world history. That's what it means to be a devotee, you see. He's not content to see the suffering humanity continue to go down to the animal kingdom, being misled by the lying propaganda of the materialists, Hollywood, Bollywood, etc. He's not happy to see that, you see. He, within himself, he is very happy chanting Hare Krishna. So, in one sense, he is the most satisfied person. But at the same time, there is no one more dissatisfied than a devotee of the Lord. Because he cannot tolerate to see the whole world is being cheated by the leaders, so-called leaders, who are simply materialistically minded. So this verse proves that a devotee of the Lord can be very active. He can do so many things. And all of those things can be offered in the service of Krishna. It's not that Krishna consciousness is something once a week at the temple. Krishna consciousness is something at every moment. Under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, the disciple learns the art of how to connect every thought, word, and deed with the pleasure of Krishna. Every second. You may say, what about enjoying my family life? Yeah, that's also offered in Krishna's service. So it becomes even more enjoyable. We don't deny the ordinary pleasures. We purify them. You want to be a wealthy businessman? All right. Become more wealthy than Bill Gates for Krishna. You want to have children? Well, have a nice family and raise them to be devotees of the Lord who can do something wonderful for the whole world by their lives. You want to write? Then write prolifically. You like to fight? Fight for Krishna. Our Srila Prabhupada was a brilliant, tough fighter, philosophically. He was fighting against this material philosophy. He was a brilliant, tough fighter. The most brilliant, the toughest fighter you've ever seen is Srila Prabhupada. Nobody could defeat Prabhupada. He said, I act like a king because nobody can defeat me. So, you take your... inclination to act in a certain way, whatever nature you have of acting in this way or in that way, and you purify that by offering it in the service of Krishna. And then you become enlivened. And you know, there's a little insider secret. You know what happens when you do that? Can you guess what happens? Whatever talent, whatever ability you have and you offer to Krishna, what happens? Krishna will give you more talents and more abilities. And when you offer those, again, in the service of Krishna, he'll give you even more talents and more abilities. And I can keep going on. When you offer those to Krishna, he gives you even more. When you offer those, even more in this way. And there's no end to how much you become empowered by Krishna for doing wonderful things on his behalf. So, do you want an exciting life? Would you like an exciting life that's a thrill at every moment? Of course we would. We try to get it in sense gratification, or the pleasures of the tongue, the pleasures of the genitals, the pleasures of the false ego. We try to get it in those ways, but the problem is it's not us. That isn't us. If I'm hungry and you say, and you take my chatter and you stick it in a
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Krishna says that about how someone who is actually learned can see the difference between action in inaction and inaction in action. To be able to see, one who sees action and inaction sees that the Mayavadis and the yogis who simply want to sit down and do nothing, so-called non-action, they're still acting. Their minds are active, even their breathing. They have to move about. They're still having to eat something, still have to evacuate. They're still creating karma. Action means creating karma. They're still creating karma. They haven't freed themselves from karma chakra by their so-called inaction. And one who sees inaction in action means the Vaishnava who is offering everything in Krishna's service, as described here in this verse. He is actually, even though he appears to be very, very active, he is completely inactive. He's creating zero karma. So the actual understanding of what is, of inaction and action is that which does not create any karma, that is inaction. And that which creates karma, that is action. So, if by sitting down and doing nothing you're still creating karma, then actually you're still active. And if by acting like anything to bring about a spiritual revolution on this planet, you're being inactive because you're not creating any karma. You understand? Yes. Yeah. Questions more? So everybody's happy now? Satisfied? Feeling no obstacles in life? Everything's just smoothly sailing along. Back to home, back to Godhead. Yeah. I'll have her repeat it. Just let her hear it, then she can repeat it.
What if some things that you're doing may not be in accordance with Krishna's will? You've got to be doing things for Krishna that Krishna wants, desires, not things that are undesirable.
If it makes sense. Mm-hmm. He says that in we are meant to do everything that Krishna wants it. So the actions that may be performed, it may not be what Krishna desires.
What may not be?
Any actions that we may perform.
Yeah, some of the things we do may not be what Krishna desires. Right?
Yeah. So how we can see that?
Yeah, how can we discern that?
How can we discern that?
Yeah, that's why a spiritual master is very important. That's why Vaishnavas, the association of Vaishnavas, also are very important things. That's why Prabhupada's books are important things. By these three things, Guru, Sadhus, and Shastra, the spiritual master, the devotees, and Prabhupada's books, then you can gradually learn what's to be done and what's not to be done. Just like you're a new person in some corporate job. You go in, it's completely unknown to you. Everybody else there knows exactly what to do and what not to do, but you don't. So how do you learn? Well, your supervisor gives you some instructions, your co-workers give you some tips, you make a few mistakes here and there, you get corrected, and gradually become expert. You know exactly what the corporation expects of you at every minute of your workday. And you're able to do it and stay focused on doing exactly what you know your duty is. So the same thing applies in Krishna consciousness. By hearing from the spiritual master, by hearing from the devotees, by studying Prabhupada's books, and by the realizations you get by actually doing the service. Gradually what was somewhat confusing in the beginning becomes crystal clear. You really start to know exactly what you're doing. It's like the sunrise. It doesn't just pop up all of a sudden. It's a gradual thing on the eastern horizon. So to go to the point of complete clarity is a gradual awakening. It doesn't happen instantly. But you have to be patient. You have to do your daily duties. Chant your rounds, rise early, follow our principles, associate with devotees, render service. Keep doing your daily duties. And this way, the Krishna sun will gradually arise within your heart. And everything will gradually become revealed. Jnanam, vijnanam, what is that verse? If you're just not forgetting, it says when the sun... there's a very nice Bhagavad Gita verse which describes how the sun rises. When the sun rises, everything becomes visible. Similarly, when you become Krishna conscious, then everything becomes known. So it's just like the sunrise. You've got to be patient. Keep doing your prescribed duties, whatever the spiritual master has instructed you to do, whatever the devotees have instructed. Keep following the instructions. And in due course of time, everything will become very, very clear to you. And whatever is unclear, well, you can inquire. You see. Why have I come? You see. So you can inquire. You can get help. I haven't come to see the scenery, although there's some nice scenery here. I didn't come for the scenery. Yesterday they were in Sydney. They said, oh, look, here's the Sydney Opera House. I said, who cares? I don't want to. You know, do you want me to eat my own vomit or what? You know. I don't come here for seeing the sights. I come here to give spiritual guidance to anybody who's wanting it, you see. That's why I'm here. To help them get a clearer picture of how to be Krishna conscious. That's why I'm here. So take advantage. And anyone who's looking for guidance, take advantage. That's why I'm here. Does that answer your question sufficiently? Any other questions? Yeah.
You get to a point where you actually have to figure things out yourself after some time. When you join, you do whatever the temple president says, and then you do that for so long, and you surrender and you go forward, and then it gets to a point where you actually can't do that anymore, because that falls when you actually become more of an individual. And then you have to, then I find myself now, you're actually on your own. You don't have that, I don't feel so much that feeling locally that someone's watching. You actually have to make your own decisions, and that's quite a scary thing.
He's saying that in the beginning you take up the service where the temple president says that you go on doing it and you feel it that you're doing it. And in the due course of time, then... that you come to a point that you cannot do those things. Then you are on your own, and you don't have the same feeling.
Am I correct?
Yes.
And okay.
Sorry, and further
what you said.
Someone is working under a temple president's guidance. They do whatever he says for some time, but then all of a sudden they reach a point where they can't do that anymore, and they're like a ship without a rudder. Is that what you're saying? Something like that?
Yeah, and then she has to take her own decision.
She has to make her
own decision. See, that's why having a spiritual master is very important. Because a temple president is, you can give up a temple president.
She is initiated.
Yeah. I'm saying that the guru-disciple relationship is an eternal relationship. So, temple president is not an eternal relationship. See? The temple president can go somewhere else. But the guru-disciple relationship is an eternal relationship. So that's why that relationship is very essential. To have a relationship with your spiritual master where you can always feel that I'm under this person's guidance. That's an eternal relationship. That's important. So that's the real, if you want security and stability, that's the answer. Now, I don't know your particular situation with the spiritual master. That could be some, I don't know the particulars of that situation.
No, very, very close, very inspired by his preaching. My spiritual master is Indrajumna Swami. He's very dynamic.
Our spiritual master is Indrajumna. She's very inspired by his preaching.
At the same time, he has 2,000 disciples.
At the same time, he has 2,000 disciples.
He doesn't come here.
Well, here's what you have to do. Whatever instructions you can get from him, you have to really value them as the purest nectar. He does answer emails. That's a great credit for him, because other gurus who have so many disciples don't even answer the disciples' emails at all. Their email address is secret. But I know he does answer the emails, even though, he'll go on marathons. We do hundreds in a day. He makes a sincere effort to give that personal guidance, even though he has many disciples. So if I were you, I would take advantage of his kindness and find a way to get personal instructions from him, either traveling to where he is and meeting with him. I know he's very merciful. Now, that's what I would do if I were you.
Sometimes the spiritual master wants you to grow up.
Yes, that is a natural thing. Every guru wants his disciples to grow up. That's a fact. I know in my own life, as an example, when I joined the movement, it was anybody who wanted to could write Prabhupada a letter and he would write him back. Can you imagine? You can get direct instructions from Prabhupada himself about anything. That's how it was when I joined. But just after that, the policy changed in a few months, because it was getting too much for Prabhupada to handle all that correspondence. But I had already had some correspondence with him, and I was a little addicted, so I took the chance of writing him again. And he told me, actually, you should inquire from the local authority. But if there's some urgent need, I'm always happy to hear from my beloved disciples. So I knew that even though we really had to respect Prabhupada's time, so he could translate the books, but at the same time, he told me personally, if there's an urgent need, I'm happy to hear from you, my beloved disciple. I knew that. And I was honest. If there was an urgent need, I would write Prabhupada. I would try to get answers elsewhere. But if it didn't come through, I would do it. I would write Prabhupada. And I wrote him for a few years, off and on. And finally I reached a point where I was totally satisfied and I knew what I was doing in Krishna consciousness. And I didn't write him anymore. I grew up. He didn't tell me to grow up. But I reached a point where I knew I didn't need that those personal letters anymore, because what I already had, I was being energized by the letters I already had unlimitedly. I didn't need any more letters. I have about 10 of them. Those 10 letters were enough. I didn't need any more energy, direct personal energy from him. But I was, because I was still getting that direct personal energy at every moment from the original 10 letters. You see. So I grew up without being told that I should grow up. That was Prabhupada's kindness. He never said, stop writing me. He said, I'm always happy to hear from my beloved disciples if there's urgent need. So that made a big impact on me. And now that I'm a spiritual master myself, I have to remember that. How Prabhupada was so kind to me. Now I'm just trying to catch up. I'm a week behind on my emails. I just checked the other day how many emails I've sent out in the last few years. 26,000 emails I've written. So I'm just trying to... I help other people too, who are not my disciples. I'm willing to help anybody. I can help you also with your personal questions. If you write me, I will also answer your letters too. If you need help, I'll be glad to help you personally. That is called Siksha Guru, you see. Any senior Vaishnava can be taken also as Guru, but never they take the place of the Diksha Guru. The Diksha Guru is always, he's that special position. We take others whose Siksha helps us to become better disciples of our Diksha Guru, that's all. If someone says something which is not good for our relationship with our Diksha Guru, we reject that Siksha Guru. This is not good. This relationship is not good. But if there is a Siksha Guru who by his instructions, I feel I'm coming closer to my Diksha Guru by his instructions, you see, then that Siksha is very good. So you need to find a devotee or devotees whose Siksha helps you to feel you're becoming stronger in your relationship with your Guru Maharaj. You see. And you take their help. I did that. I had so many. I would write different GBCs, senior devotees. Different senior devotees, I would write them. I would inquire in the Bhagavatam classes, you know, from senior devotees. And I received many different instructions from different godbrothers that still vibrate in my heart. They're very wonderful instructions. And I treasure those also. Prabhupada was acting through those godbrothers. Just like I remember I was in New Vrindavan. And there was one festival there. And I knew one of my big weaknesses was laziness. I knew I had to conquer this laziness if I really wanted to advance in Krishna consciousness. So I asked the sannyasi, how does one conquer laziness? And then I got real scared. Oh my God, what's he going to tell me? He's probably going to tell me by hard work, which is what I didn't want to hear. It's kind of, oh no, he's going to say by hard work, and then, oh, I'll have to disobey his instruction by continuing being lazy, my lazy nature. But then he just amazed me. This sannyasi was very good at short, sutra-like answers that were very, very poignant. But he answered with two words. He said, by love. I went, wow. That's how you conquer laziness, by love. If you love someone, it's not even work anymore, you see. It's like the mother with a child, isn't it? Don't you work hard? But do you think you're working? No, it is your affection for your child, isn't it? Yeah. You see, she never thinks, oh, that I had to work so hard for this little child. She doesn't even pay me any money. No. Because she has love and affection for the child. She's working very hard day and night. Practically day and night, she's working practically 24 hours a day without any pay. And she doesn't even feel like it's work. You see, that is love. So, in this way, I was instructed by another godbrother, you see. You have to see how your Guru Maharaj can communicate with you through many different channels. Directly, through his lectures, on some letters, and through the mouths of others. His godbrothers or other senior devotees, or any devotee. Even a small child can speak something which is very profound. If everybody could move closer, it'd be easier for me to hear, you know. That'd be nice. But, especially, I'm hard of hearing already, and my ears are plugged up with mucus. It makes it 10 times worse than usual, which means practically no hearing at all. Doesn't even bother me. A little bit it did, didn't it? See, even the screaming she takes is a joy to answer the scream. That is love. For me, the scream is a horrible thing. For her, it's a wonderful thing. That is love. So, if we learn how to love Krishna, we learn how to love Guru, we learn how to love Vaishnavas, then we can do anything for them and it won't feel like a chore or a burden. It'll be nectar. Anything. Sal, any other question? Are you getting some relief from your bewilderment? Am I relieving some, taking away some of your anxieties, Mataji? I want to relieve you of all anxiety.
Yeah, you're helping.
I'm helping you?
Regarding what, and other people actually need like a pat on the back or encouragement, and you need to go out and preach and come back and someone says, how did you do today? You need to feel that you're part of it.
Well, the real key is actually, the real key is we have to, if you're a good, the real solution is if you can just grab hold of the lotus feet of Guru, and he'll just pull you all the way. That's the real bottom line. Because then you will feel the pat on the back at every minute. You understand? When I was a young devotee, Prabhupada wrote me a letter. He said, continue enthusiastically as you are doing, and surely Krishna will bless you. So that pat on the back, that's Krishna's blessing, you see. So Prabhupada told me, if I continued to act enthusiastically, I would always get Krishna's pat on the back, you see. At every minute I'd be getting him. So I didn't need it, even if nobody, even if the temple president didn't do it, even if my godbrothers didn't do it, even if nobody did it, Prabhupada told me Krishna would give you the pat on the back if you just keep doing enthusiastic service. So I hung on to that instruction of Prabhupada, and it worked. I've been doing it now for 36 years. And I'm still getting the pat on the back at every minute from Krishna. So even, don't come back and say, well, these devotees are no good because they're not giving a pat on the back. See, why don't you give them a pat on the back? If they're not giving you a pat on the back, that means they're in Maya. You should be giving them a pat on the back to get them out of Maya. You understand the point? If they can't give you a pat on the back, that means they're in Maya.
So that means you have to be the one that, you have to be the one that gives them the pat on the back. If you're not getting the senior association you want, that means you need to be the senior association to help everybody else advance. Yes. But do not remain neophyte. You must become advanced, Mataji. That's an order. You must become an advanced, do not remain neophyte.
I guess it's a comfort zone to remain neophyte.
Mm-hmm.
It's a comfort zone to remain neophyte.
It's a very uncomfortable comfort zone. It's boring. It's depressing. The key is always stretch yourself a little bit outside, not too far, but just a little bit outside of your comfort zone. Just like I do these annual around the world preaching tours. So I have a set pattern, but this year I decided to be a little daring. I'll stretch my comfort zone a little bit more, and I'll include Christchurch. I don't know what'll happen there, but my preaching might bomb. I don't know what'll happen in Christchurch. But Rebecca was writing some encouraging emails, and said, "Well, maybe it'll be okay. I'll stretch my comfort zone to include Christchurch on this year's tour." So that. Whatever comfort zone you have, that's all right, but just stretch a little bit beyond it. And then that, after some time, that will feel comfortable. And then stretch yourself just a little bit more beyond that comfort zone. And in this way, gradually, your comfort zone will be, include everything. You'll be able to do anything for Krishna. You come back proud?
Proud.
Says you go out and distribute books, and when you come back, you feel proud.
You feel proud.
That's the fear there.
So develop a sense of force.
In other words, you come back, you have all that that all enlivening spiritual energy. You're surcharged with spiritual energy. And what do you do with it? Instead of offering puja to Krishna, you offer puja to yourself. That's pride.
You don't want to, but it gets
you get surcharged with tons of spiritual energy from distributing books, and you come back and you worship yourself. That's called pride, you see. And what happens is you lose all the potency. The trick is, whatever potency you have, you offer that back to Krishna, and then Krishna will give you 10 times more potency. Instead of using that to worship yourself, you offer that again to Krishna. I mean, for spiritual masters, it's really crucial because, you know, the spiritual master has all these disciples bowing down at his feet, offering him arti. You're writing these Vyas Puja homage books. It's heavy stuff. If the spiritual master takes any of that as being, you know, really for himself, then he's in trouble. He has to offer every single bit of it up the parampara, the Prabhupada and the Krishna. Otherwise, he loses everything. He'll fall down. We've seen so many gurus, they got a little proud, and they got even more proud, and then boom, they're finished. So, pride cometh before the fall. That energy is good. But you have to channel it back to Krishna. Not to yourself. And then you'll get unlimited energy. Krishna will give you so much energy you can make the whole world Krishna conscious. You know Prabhupada said that? He says this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita? He says if a devotee of the Lord can chant the holy name without any offense, then he becomes Jagad Guru. And under his influence, the whole world will take up Krishna consciousness. Just by his pure chanting, one devotee can make the whole world Krishna conscious. So just imagine if we had devotees like that in ISKCON, that you were so pure that you could make the whole world Krishna conscious just by your pure chanting. And we had 10 devotees in the movement who were like that, or 100 or 1,000. Just imagine how quickly we could flood this planet with pure Krishna bhakti. So we should, each and every one of us should strive to get rid of those rascals. What are those rascals called? The 10 nama-parad. We should really strive to get rid of those nama-parad. Become pure chanters of the name. For our own benefit and for the benefit of the fallen conditioned souls of this universe. Any other question? Yes, not to you.
I just read one of Prabhupada's lecture, must be 1976 or something like that. And then he said that being a human, we make mistakes and forgetfulness and another one.
There's four faults of the conditioned soul. It's a tendency to be, he has imperfect senses. He has a tendency to be illusioned. He commits mistakes, and he's very proud. He's a cheater. He thinks I am. He advertises himself as a great learned person when actually he's subject to these defects.
Krishna say something similar like this in any words that, you know, can you elaborate more of this bad quality of human, please?
Well, that verse, those four deep, there is some verse somewhere in the Vedic literatures which specifically states these four faults. I've come across that verse, I don't recall where it is right now. But those, the four defects are mentioned in a particular verse that Prabhupada quotes all the time. They are in a particular shloka. I don't think it's in the Bhagavad Gita, but it is in the Vedic wisdom somewhere.
And it's like it's always with you, with being human, to be mistake or thing like that. And how can we improve it in a way that
How do we improve so we stop making so many mistakes?
Yeah.
Well, that's why we need advanced association. Because the advanced devotees will very kindly point out to us what our mistakes are. You see, there's four different levels of advancement. The first stage is known as unconscious incompetence. That means you're making so many mistakes, you don't even know they're mistakes. You're unconsciously incompetent. And then, by associating with advanced devotees who constantly point out to you what a fool and a rascal you are. You see? Doing this mistake, that mistake, this mistake. You idiot! Why did you do it like that? You see? Then you become consciously incompetent. And that's advancement. You finally realize what a nincompoop you actually are. See, now you have some ability to, you know what to work on. I have this fault, that fault, now I can do something about it. And then gradually become consciously competent. You gradually take all those bad habits and those mistakes you make, and you change yourself. Slowly, slowly, gradually you train, just like you train a child, you train yourself to stop doing the stupid, wrong things. You stop smoking cigarettes, you stop drinking coffee, you stop having hamburgers, you know. And then the more subtle ones, you know, once we get into Krishna consciousness. And then finally you reach a stage, the advanced devotees are on a stage of unconscious competence. That is Raganuga platform. They're spontaneously doing everything perfectly. That's a highly advanced stage where you spontaneously, naturally, you're doing everything perfectly.
Can you do
without having to say, oh, am I doing it wrong? Am I doing it right? No, everything, you, like Prabhupada, you see. Perfect. Prabhupada was poetry. Every gesture of his hand, every word from his mouth, his every aspect of his body language, every thought, every decision, everything he did was absolutely poetic. It wasn't only perfect, it was also poetic at the same time. Like the most incredible actor in the most famous movie that was ever filmed. Everybody just going, wow. The devotees used to sit and just watch Prabhupada. They would just sit and look at him doing things. They were just amazed to see Prabhupada's pastimes going on in front of them, you see. So that when you become a highly advanced devotee, that is called unconscious competence. So now you have to find devotees who are willing to point out to you your faults. So you can come from the platform of unconscious competence to, unconscious incompetence to conscious incompetence. That's what you need to work on now. You have to become completely, totally conscious of all of your incompetence. Your incompetent thoughts, your incompetent words, and your incompetent actions. You have to learn how to see the incompetencies that are happening on all three levels. Mental, verbal, and bodily. And by becoming aware of those, then you can gradually, you know, train yourself how to become advanced. Yes.
A lot of mistakes come out of the mouth when you speak.
That's right. Therefore, don't be too quick to speak.
Yeah.
God gave you two ears and one mouth. That means you should hear twice as much as you speak. Especially a young devotee should not be so eager to speak. In fact, one tendency, sometimes an older devotee will be preaching to someone, a young devotee comes along and says, well, I know how to preach better than this older devotee. I'm going to just take over this preaching. That's a very offensive thing. Sometimes young devotees do that. They want to brush an old devotee away and take over the preaching to some guest. No, young devotees should be very eager to hear from senior devotees. Very eager to hear. Prabhupada said, I can speak nicely because I heard nicely. So become very eager to hear. That's the key. You were making some point, I think. Yeah. Take the hand away from the mouth. Yeah.
This wasn't very good. She was saying about mistakes, it was a mistake for her. So it's better not to bring it out of it.
What is it? I don't follow.
She was making a point which was not proper.
What was the point? Yeah, the key is to take advantage of advanced association. The devotees who can actually point out our incompetencies. That's very important there. It's difficult, though, to do that. It's sometimes very difficult because we're proud. I'm thinking I'm great. You're thinking you're great. You see? Sometimes the disciple wants to serve the spiritual master in a certain way, and the disciple thinks, oh, this is such a great idea I have. But, you know, they were instructed to serve in a different way, but they thought, well, I know better how to serve than the way I was told to serve. See, these are, and then they are making a big mistake. Krishna teaches them a lesson for acting independently. Yes.
Yeah, because interesting in the topic of guru, or like speaking about Diksha Guru, and then you brought up like Shiksha instructors, like that. So even in the path of devotion, we see there are many things that can come and take away your sincerity, or you may find you're in situations where you may be cheated. so many pitfalls along the way, even in the path of teachers and people you've looked up to. What are the ensuring guidelines within the heart to keep you, that Krishna keeps you safe? For instance, like Putana's story is coming as a cheating guru, isn't it? Somebody who comes into the association of devotees. You can also get entangled with different instructors that may have pratishta, different issues. What are the guidelines in your own heart to keep us safely traveling towards Krishna, even though those...
Tesham satadayutanam bhajatam pradipurvakam dadami buddhiyogam tam yenamam upiyantite. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them the understanding of which they can come to me. So, you must rise early in the morning, sing the Gavastakam prayers, chant 16 rounds. If you're living at home, rise early in the morning and try to get those rounds done as early as possible. Have good sadhana, that's the point. Have good sadhana, read Prabhupada's books, associate with other people who are in the same mentality that you are, and keep your activities pure. If Prabhupada were here right now, seeing what I'm doing, would he be pleased with me? You see? If you always try to think, speak, and act in such a way that Prabhupada will be pleased, then everything will be crystal clear. Everything will be crystal clear. Prabhupada always felt that his Guru Maharaj is with him at every minute, seeing him and guiding him and blessing him. Why? Because he was very, very dedicated to following, always remembering and worshipping and trying to execute successfully the order given by his spiritual master. So if you will always remember, meditate upon, and worship the instructions you have received from the spiritual master, then, in this way, you will always feel how the guru, the whole disciplic succession is blessing you and guiding you and inspiring you at every minute. Do you understand? Does that make sense? Yeah.
So a lot of that rests on your own personal sadhana, isn't it? Then your sadhana practices.
Your own purity will make you or break you. Your own purity, your lack of it, will make you or break you. You have to be very pure in your desire to fully surrender to the desire of Krishna and Prabhupada. To be very, very strong in that desire and pray. Of course, we're weak now in them. We're still being dragged by lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. You might as well be honest about it, isn't it? We're still being dragged by these enemies. It's a rough ride sometimes, let's face it. But we have to beg Guru, we have to beg Krishna, we have to beg Srila Prabhupada to help us out of this ridiculous position of being a slave of lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy, and come to an actual position of strength in Krishna consciousness. And they will help. If you beg for the mercy, you'll get it, I guarantee you. You just have to beg for it. Prabhupada told us in Boston, he said, I'm always begging Krishna that I will not fall into Maya. So if Prabhupada is begging Krishna, please protect me from falling into Maya, what should our mentality be? We have to always be sober in Krishna consciousness, understanding I can fall down at any minute. That is the greatest... Those who are the most sober actually experience the most bliss. It's not that sobriety is some kind of old-fashioned, uncool, miserable state of mind. I was amazed. When I first came around this movement, I wasn't yet joined, but I was checking it out. His Holiness Vishnu Jan Maharaj had attracted me by his preaching. And there was one evening program at a home. Everybody was in the living room, but I got a little thirsty and I went for a drink of water in the kitchen. And Vishnu John Maharaj also came in there. And this, the two of us were alone in the kitchen. Everybody else was in the living room. And he gave me one of the most poignant instructions I've ever got in my whole life. He said, "You have to become sober." And I went, "Wow." In my mind, I was going, "Wow." In those days, the philosophy was get intoxicated forever. That's where it's at. But he was telling me, he was coming from a place where he was 10,000 times divinely intoxicated in Krishna consciousness. And he said, "You have to become sober." And I knew that was right. I could understand. This is the real nectar to become sober. So, in this way, I got my training. And Prabhupada confirmed. He wrote me one letter. He said, "You have been trained up under the expert guidance of His Holiness Vishnu Jana Maharaj." And I knew that Prabhupada had been speaking through him to me. Prabhupada used him as an instrument to guide me. So in this way, we'll have one more question. We don't want to go on forever because everybody will start losing interest after a while. But this is the last one.
Just on that point, Prabhu, I was wondering if it would therefore be reasonable to say that due to nature, there are degrees or different levels of sobriety according to your own personal nature?
Better repeat that one. I couldn't make anything.
Sobriety according to one's nature.
Oh, a sobriety. Well, yeah, some people have a sober nature and some don't. That's a fact. Some people have a more frivolous nature, according to the modes of nature. Someone who has a more sober nature, they are a sattvic person. That is a good quality. Someone who has a more sober nature, it is a very good quality. If we don't have that quality, we should hang out with those who have it, because it's a wonderful quality, sobriety. It takes you to a higher level of bliss. On a frivolous person, there has to always be something being spoken. You can't, if there's silence, then it's, "Oh my God, what's going on?" It's silent. It becomes frightening. Has to be some frivolous chitter-chatter always going on constantly, you see. But a sober person, he can speak and he cannot speak. And it's nectar in either case. Prabhupada gives an example in the Light of the Bhagavat. Have you seen that book, Light of the Bhagavat? Yeah. He gives the example of the rivers which... Of course, here I asked about your river here, it flows constantly. It's spring-fed. But there are some rivers which are fed by the rains in the hills, you see. During the rainy season, they flow very nicely. And during the dry season, they are just a dry riverbed. So Prabhupada compares, I think Bhagavatam compares, but Prabhupada mentions that the great reformers, they are like these rivers. Sometimes they speak and sometimes they don't speak. So Prabhupada's words were very powerful and his silence also was very powerful. Whether he was speaking something, whether he was silent, it was either, in any case, his association was ecstatic. I remember the first day I was with His Divine Grace. We greeted Him at the airport and there was maybe 300 of us there. We had the kirtan, we took Him through the terminal with the kirtan party, and then we got to the place where the cars come to pick up the passengers. But there was no car for Prabhupada. He simply stood there silently, didn't say a word. And we all just stood there and looked at Him. There's a photograph in the, some of this pastime. Prabhupada just standing there. He didn't say a word. But it was very potent. He was the world of Acharya was teaching just by his silence. He was showing us how to be tolerant. He didn't say, he was the perfection of tolerance. There wasn't even the slightest disturbance in his mind. He was just patiently standing there on the sidewalk, waiting for the car. Actually, I never saw the car came. Some car came to take me down to the Rathyatra site so I could be there before Prabhupada, so I could greet him twice. But Prabhupada just waited and waited for that car. And just by his silence, he was teaching us volumes and volumes of lessons. So sobriety, if you don't have it, find devotees who have it. Learn how to develop some sobriety. It's a very wonderful quality. It means you can go deep, deep, deep into hearing, chanting, and remembering the pastimes of the Lord. That is sobriety. Frivolous person is always skimming the surface. They don't know how to go deeply into something. But a sober person can go very, very, very deeply into hearing about Krishna, chanting, remembering the Lord, doing some devotional service. They can go very, very deeply into Krishna consciousness by any devotional activity, making a garland, whatever it may be. Cooking, cleaning, even cleaning a toilet. So, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Raja Vidya Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.